There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Several men ride on horses through a prairie to the edge of a forest.
Commonplace, if somewhat grim, unsocial event known as a necktie party. The guest of dishonor, a cowboy named Joe Caswell, just a moment away from a rope, a short dance several feet off the ground, and then the dark eternity of all evil men. Mr. Joe Caswell, who, when the good Lord passed out a conscience, a heart of feeling for fellow men, must have been out for a beer and missed out. Mr. Joe Caswell, in the last quiet moment of a violent life.
A minister walks up and opens a small book.
Reverend, no need, I ain't interested in prayers.
And you're a mortal soul, Caswell. Are you interested in that?
It's my mortal neck that concerns me now.
To another man.
And it's going to be your pleasure to see that it's stretched a couple of feet. Since that book ain't going to help, might as leave make it short and get it over with.
Judge?
You got anything to say? It's your right, you know.
That's my right, is it, Judge? The young fella I put a hole in had too much mouth, not enough brains. I'd invite him out again tomorrow if I had it to do all over again.
You shot my son in the back, Caswell. And that's a long country mile from an invitation to a showdown. Now, if that's all you got to say, I got this to add. I'd like it to take a while. I'd like you to feel it, Caswell. The more you kick, the more justice I figure there is in the world.
Well, I'll do a jig for you, Pappy. Just like a puppet. How about it? Can't we get it over with?
I can tell you this, Caswell. You're an evil person. You're a disease. And when we hang you, it's a service. All right. Get on with the job.
Caswell, with the rope around his neck, sits on a horse. A man stands next to the horse with a whip. Caswell's feet dangle several feet off the ground. Nearby on the ground, the shadow of his body and the rope. Now, the shadow of his body fades away, leaving only the rope. The minister and judge look up at the empty noose.
Oh, my dear God. What happened to him?
The noose continues to swing back and forth. Caswell opens his eyes, licks his lips. Looks up at a man wearing a white coat.
Try to relax. You're going to be all right. I'll explain to you what's happened.
Caswell trembles.
Where am I?
You're a long way from home, old friend. A very long way.
Where?
You're in New York City. 80 years from the last moment of your recollection.
The man walks over to a glass and metal enclosure.
By this. This is a time machine. What's happened to you involves principles which you wouldn't understand. For the moment, I don't know what your past was. But you've got a most distinguished future. You're the first time traveler in the history of man. And I'm going to introduce you to a whole new world. And you're going to tell me about an old one.
The man opens Caswell's jacket and examines his neck. Caswell grimaces. Later, the man speaks into a recording machine.
At 8:15, the subject appeared, desperately tired. So I put him to bed. After 2 hours, I've discovered the following. His name is Joseph Caswell. He tells me he was a trail boss on a cattle ranch in the territory of Montana. His last moment of recollection was November 14th, 1880. He says he was riding herd when suddenly he blacked out. He awoke to find himself on the cot of my laboratory. He felt no sensations, and only in the last few moments did he seem to have any grasp of what has occurred.
He stops recording and stands up. Sits on his desk and takes out a cigarette. Picks up the microphone again.
There's one disturbing point. There are the marks of a rope etched deeply into his neck. He has no explanation for this. And I have one other observation. It's hardly scientific. I don't like his looks. I don't like the eyes or the face or the expression. I get a feeling of disquiet. I get a feeling that I've taken a 19th century primitive and placed him in a 20th century jungle. And heaven help whoever gets in his way.
He looks over as Caswell walks into the lab. Caswell looks at a rack of test tubes. Then, continues to walk across the room. The scientist stands up as Caswell approaches him. He offers Caswell a cigarette. Caswell takes one and holds it in his hand. The scientist flicks a Zippo lighter.
That's fire right out of there.
I thought you were tired.
I am. There's plenty of time to sleep. There's plenty of time for that. Now I want to look at that world out there.
The scientist walks over to the window. Caswell follows him and takes a hold of his arm.
I want to see if there are things out there like you described to me. Carriages without horses and the buildings that
rise. They're out there, Caswell. Things that you've never seen before. Things you can't imagine.
He opens the drapes. Caswell looks out the window. Down to a busy urban street, his mouth wide open. He steps away from the window and holds his hands over his ears.
But some things don't change. Ideas, concepts, things like right and wrong.
I know all about right and wrong. Once there was a deputy sheriff in Dodge City tried to beat the difference between him and my back with a wet rope. I know all about right and wrong.
What about justice, Caswell? What about justice?
Caswell puts his hands down.
Am I supposed to know about justice?
More than most men, probably. Right and wrong, they could try to beat into you. But justice, Caswell. This came at the end of a rope, didn't it? That's where you were when I reached back into time. You were at the end of a rope, weren't you, Caswell? 6 or 8 feet off the ground. And I got to you in that one fraction of a moment before your neck was broken.
When you're dangling at the end of a rope, it don't matter whether you're 1 foot off the ground or 100.
You killed someone.
A whole territory full. I stopped counting after 20.
He walks up to the scientist and looks him straight in the eye.
Well?
I'm going to have to send you back.
Back?
Back to where you belong. Back to that very moment, if I can.
And that's supposed to be justice, huh? I died once already, mister. I've been to hell. Now I'm back.
And those 20 men that you killed, Caswell, they died with no discomfort?
Mister, you're just talking words. Justice, right and wrong. They sound good in this nice warm room. And a nice full stomach. Just a few feet away from a soft bed. They sound nice and they go down easy. But you just try them on an ice-cold mesa where another man's bread or another man's jacket stands between you and staying alive.
Pointing at the time machine.
You get in this machine of yours and you go back to where I was and you talk about your law and your order and your justice. They're gonna sound different. Mister, I know your kind. You're clean-faced, you're Johnny-come-lately dandies.
Grabbing him by the lapels.
You come out in your warm trains rolling over the graves of men like me. I just hate your kind!
Punching him down to the desk, then picking him up and heaving him down onto the floor. The scientist crawls to the desk, reaches into a drawer as Caswell clobbers him on the head with a desk lamp. Caswell reaches into the desk drawer and pulls out a gun. Picks up the recording machine and drops it to the floor.
I have one other observation. It's hardly scientific. I don't like his looks. I don't like the eyes or the face or the expression.
Caswell runs out.
I get a feeling that I've taken a 19th century primitive and placed him in a 20th century jungle. And heaven help whoever gets in his way.
Caswell runs out onto a crowded city sidewalk, pushing aside any pedestrians in his way. He looks up at blinking neon signs. He continues to bulldoze his way through the sidewalk, then stops to look at the signs and electric lighting all around him. Stops under the marquee of a theater. Runs into the street, dodging cars. Then back to the sidewalk. He starts running again. Stops at a phone booth, just as a woman walks out of it. He looks in at the ringing phone. He goes in and examines the phone. Jostles the handset, and it falls to the floor.
There is overtime. Please deposit 25 cents. Hello? Hello?
He jumps away from the phone, inadvertently knocking the doors shut. He braces his feet on one side and thrusts his way out through the glass wall. He lies on the sidewalk amidst the broken glass. He gets to his feet, wipes his forehead with his handkerchief. He enters a restaurant where a jukebox is playing. The bartender watches him.
What'll it be?
He punches at the jukebox, then pulls a wooden chair from the bar and smashes it open. Then he stumbles over to the bar.
Expensive evening for you, pal. That's gonna cost.
Caswell clasps his hands on his ears.
There's so much noise.
Look, buddy, if you don't pay for it, I'm gonna have to. So let's have no trouble, huh? If you got any...
Caswell pulls out the gun.
Easy, pal, easy.
Just bring me one of those.
The bartender brings out a bottle. Caswell, unable to figure out the pourer, pulls it off and drinks straight from the bottle.
Well?
Nothing, pal. No argument. No argument.
What is that? Where does the music come from?
That thing? That's a jukebox. Just a plain old jukebox. You been in stir, buddy?
No, it's just that I need some sleep. And those things that are running around.
Things?
Those carriages without horses. And the lights going on and off. And the noise. It's like thunder all the time.
Buddy, why don't you go home and sack down, huh? Get a good night's sleep. Take a couple of bottles with you. That's what you need, is sleep. Here, take these home with you.
Putting a couple of bottles on the bar. Caswell looks up at the TV over the bar.
Well, don't you know what that is?
It's a window.
Here, we'll give you a demonstration, huh?
He turns it on. On the screen, a cowboy walks toward the camera. Caswell trembles.
All right, hombre.
And grabs his gun.
You got your chance to draw. Now you better make your move.
The bartender ducks.
All right, cowboy, you gotta pay for this. Police! Police!
Caswell runs Police! Back out into the street, gun in hand. Caswell again encounters the blinking lights of the theater. Steps into the street in front of a speeding cab. Shoots into the cab and runs across the street, then falls into the gutter. Back in the scientist's laboratory. He walks back to the desk, looks down at the scientist's dead body on the floor. Caswell slumps down to his knees.
Mister, you... Man, you... Help me, please. Help me!
A man enters, drawing a gun. Caswell gets up and puts both his hands up.
I thought the place was empty. Just move away from the desk, cowboy.
What do you want?
What do I want? What do you want, Buffalo Bill? Well, that's what I want. Whatever's around loose.
The man steps behind the desk, looks at the dead body on the floor.
Well, it looks like you got here before me. Saved me a little trouble. Thanks. But I'm here now. You know, I usually go to bed this early. So the place being dark, I figured I'd be all alone. You checked the desk, did you?
Caswell shakes his head.
I guess you don't keep much cash around here.
Tries the right drawer.
Figured maybe a key to a drawer or something.
Then the left. He rummages through the center drawer and finds a keychain.
See? I expect he's got a wall safe or something around here. Don't you?
Pointing his gun at Caswell.
Hey, cowboy, I asked you a question. Don't you figure he's got a wall safe or something around here?
Caswell grabs for the gun, flips the man over the desk, and punches him to the floor while dropping the gun. As Caswell goes for the gun on the floor, the man gets up and steps on Caswell's hand. They tussle over the gun, and the man punches Caswell away and pushes him toward the window. The man ties the drape cord around Caswell's neck and leaves him for dead. He returns to the desk, picks up the keys and Zippo lighter, puts the lighter in his pocket, heads over to a set of filing cabinets. He fiddles with the combination lock, but can't open it. Goes over to a large control panel on the wall, turns some knobs and presses a button. Lights flash on an apparatus next to the control panel. The man continues strolling through the lab. He walks around the time machine. And reaches the entrance. He looks inside. Walks into the enclosure and a glass panel descends, closing over the entrance. He bangs on the glass from the inside. Lights flash inside the enclosure. He disappears. On the ground, there appears the shadow of the man hanging from the noose. His body dangles several feet up from the ground.
Cut him down! Hurry up! Cut him down!
Says the judge.
That ain't Joe Caswell. That ain't the guy we hanged.
They look down on the ground.
Look at his clothes. What kind of clothes are they?
They walk over to his body.
Who is it?
This is not Caswell, Reverend. It's a stranger.
The attendees get up and walk off.
What kind of devil's work is this?
I don't know. I don't know if it is devil's work.
Did we hang an innocent man then?
I hope not. I pray to God not.
The attendees lead their horses away.
This is November 1880, the aftermath of a necktie party. The victim's name, Paul Johnson, a minor league criminal and the taker of another human life. No comment on his death save this. Justice can span years. Retribution is not subject to a calendar. Tonight's case in point, in the Twilight Zone.
Credits. Directed by David Orrick McDearman. Teleplay by Rod Serling, based on a short story by George Clayton Johnson. Produced by Buck Houghton. Executive producer for Cayuga Productions, Rod Serling. Starring Albert Salmi, with Russell Johnson, Don Wyan, and George Mitchell, John Lormer, Faye Roop, Richard Carlin. Director of photography, George T. Clemens. Production manager, Ralph W. Nelson. Art directors, George W. Davis, Merrill Pye. Assistant director, Kurt Newman. Film editor, Joseph Gluck. Set decorations, Henry Grace, Theo Gleason. Sound, Frank Milton, Philip Mitchell. Animated title by UPA. Copyright 1959 by Cayuga Productions, Inc. Filmed at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Audio description by Lou Lasher.